Lines are now bridged.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the ISP Task Force meeting. This is our second meeting in the month of February here. We have a pretty full agenda today, hoping to wrap up some draft recommendations and start to explore the next topic area that the task force will address. So with that, we'll call the meeting to order, starting with roll call. Ken Kawamoto?
Here.
Stephen Lane?
Good morning.
Anil Jain?
Good morning.
Aaron Malik? Not yet. Andy Truscott?
Present.
Clint McDonald? Yes. Cynthia Fisher?
Yes, good morning.
David McCauley?
Here.
Edward John?
Here.
Terry O'Malley?
Good morning.
Wes Leonard?
Here.
Jack Poe? Raj Bachwani? Ram Saram? Ricky Bloomfield?
Good morning,
I'm here. Good morning, Ricky. Sasha Termont? Not yet. Scott Weingarten? Cheryl Turney?
Here.
Good morning. Tamer for Cowie?
Here.
Oh, thank you. Tina Esposito? Not yet. Valerie Gray? And Victor Lee?
Yep, here and on mute.
Thank you. Okay, I will turn it over to our co-chair, Ken and Steven.
Hey, Arian's here. Arian Malik.
Thanks.
Oh, hi, Arian.
Thank you, Arian.
Anyone else I missed? Okay. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you all for joining us. I want to acknowledge that David McCauley and I met at HIMSS last week and had a very nice little social hour together, but not too many other people showed up. So that was a learning on our part about how that went. I know everyone was very busy during the week, but glad to be back together again. Lauren, I think we wanted to spend a little bit of time talking about the current plan for the task force. Did you want to go over that, or do you want me to?
Sure. So as many of you know, ONC released our proposed rule on 21st Century Cures Act last week. So we expect to charge the full committee with reviewing the rule and providing their recommendations. So with that, we are going to pause for a bit on the ISP task force so that the HITECH members on this task force can shift their attention to the rule. When the committee is charged, they'll have about a 60-day comment period, in which case this task force will resume after that. So if all goes according to plan, we're looking at perhaps resuming towards the end of April or 1st of May.
Perfect. So again, our goal today is really to finalize some of the domain work that we did last year, and then as time allows, begin the discussion of medication and pharmacy data based on the comments that folks have submitted. The other housekeeping item was Tamer Fakhouri has had a slight change in his position and representation, and we just wanted to give him a chance to mention that.
Sure. Thanks, Stephen. So I've joined Livongo Health, which is a digital health company focused on building solutions that empower people with chronic conditions. I'm still continuing to practice primary care at One Medical in San Francisco. And so I feel this new position allows me to work on solutions that are highly complementary to the mission of primary care. So I'm very excited about that.
Thanks, Tamer. We just wanted the people to have a chance to know how that change went. Ken, do you have anything to add before we jump into the next task?
No, sounds good. We won't meet in this capacity profile, so let's get as much done as possible.
Great. So what we're going to be doing is opening up the draft recommendations on closed-loop referrals and care coordination that we have all worked on together. And unlike the work that we did over the last two meetings on the orders and results recommendations, here the edits have been modest, and I'm anticipating that we'll go through these pretty quickly. So I am in the document. I'm hoping that people can see that pretty well. For me, it's readable even on a laptop screen here in the Adobe Connect. So hopefully everyone can see, and I guess Clem's not with us, so he's usually our keeps us honest in terms of screen resolution. But our first recommendation, you will recall, observes that current referral workflows are inefficient, fail to leverage available interoperability tools, and that this leads to increased cost, delays in care, and poor coordination. So we have a pretty extensive set of recommendations regarding some of the details of the steps involved in closed-loop referrals, acknowledging that the 360X project has done a lot of work in this space and has a number of vendors already doing this based on direct transmission, that we acknowledge that that the use cases can be expanded to include prior authorization and requests for information. I think a lot of us heard a lot about these use cases at HIMSS. We made a point about patient identity management and the importance of that. We called out message context as an area where there are conflicting standards that are still evolving, and we encouraged efforts to harmonize or unify those approaches. That addition of the word unify really came from Clem. He didn't like the word harmonize, so we supplemented that. And then we all felt that FHIR was an important evolving standard that also should be leveraged as possible to support closed-loop referrals, and we called that out, including support for the Argonaut scheduling implementation guide. So those were our recommendations. Again, very minor change there. And then we called out some policy levers for both ONC, and then we had the addition of CMS suggesting alignment of relevant programs to reward activity that improves care through electronic closed-loop referrals, which we know that they are doing, in fact, through their quality measures. So not a lot of changes there, but just wanted to make sure that everyone was comfortable with that. Any thoughts or comments before we move on to the next one? If not, let's scroll down. Again, we're just going to be calling out some small changes along the way. The second one has to do with the collection of the clinical data that is required. So actually, if you can scroll down one in the display here, you want to go to the next item. Perfect. All right, great. So this has to do with standards for collecting the clinical data that should be collected prior to referring a patient. Terry, I believe, added this text here. This need is also relevant to transitions between care settings, such as from acute to post-acute care. I see I missed a T there. Add that in there. And then on the recommendation, there was really just some minor change in the language here that was suggested. Identify an organization or convene and support a collaboration to develop and evolve recommendations for what clinical data consulting or receiving providers should be sent in order to optimize the efficiency, et cetera. Again, just clarifying that the provider receiving a referral isn't always a consultant. It could be from a consultant to a primary care doc, for example. That happens too. Or as we said, from an acute setting to a post-acute care setting where they wouldn't be really referred to as a consultant. And then we added again some clarifying language around the standard data elements necessary for collection and transmission, including those necessary to support prior authorization. And then on the policy levers, again, we called on ONC to convene stakeholders to look at minimal standards for clinical and administrative data required and desirable for clinical referrals, calling out exemplars of CCDA and FHIR, our best friends here, as well as guidance for display of those standards, and then aligning this process with USCDI. I think most of us are aware that USCDI has had new life breathed into it by the proposed rules that came out last week. I think we're all very excited about that and look forward to working on that together with ONC. So any questions or comments about the minor edits that were made in this second observation and recommendation? Sasha found the typo. Thank you. You're so good. I hope that was the typo that Sasha found, the one that I fixed. All right. And again, we're just going to keep going through these, again, doubting that much of this is controversial, but wanting to assure that the final recommendations that come out of our task force that we will be bringing forward in our report to the ONC do reflect the consensus agreement of this group. So let's go ahead and scroll down to the next one. They get a little bit shorter now, so we'll probably be able to fit more than one on the screen. Perfect. The next one is that talking about clinician-to-clinician patient-specific messaging and the fact that we are lacking for standards to support this very important workflow, especially when it goes beyond the walls of a single institution using a single EHR. And we suggested that this be supported and incentivized, including user adoption. We know that a lot of these tools exist. Ariane and others spent years building out the direct protocol and putting it into place, but we know that in reality, it's often not utilized extensively. And then also, again, investigating how FHIR-based approaches could be developed and leveraged to support this important workflow. Any thoughts on that? Great. We will just keep on moving here. These are all priority one recommendations that came out of our earlier work. The next one has to do with the ability to reliably identify and locate providers and have an understanding of their messaging capabilities. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Sorry to interrupt. I totally missed it. David raised his hand. Maybe when you're at a good stopping point.
Oh, no, that's fine. Let's go right ahead, David.
I just want to comment relevant more to the first two points, which is I think, and I'm not sure this needs to be reflected anywhere, I'll just say it again, that we should consider a smart app style approach for managing complex referrals, that this notion that you can do it with predefined templates and predefined data exchanges strikes me as unreasonable. And you'd need a more flexible approach. I made that point in our early discussions, and then we didn't really pursue it, which is fine by me. But I think in the long run, these I would call these approaches sort of halfway technology. They're not going to be sophisticated enough to be flexible. Maybe they're where we should be to get started, but we'll need something more sophisticated in the long run.
I think that's a really good point, David, and I do think we have time to add that in if you like. I'm thinking about where it goes. I mean, we've got the closed-loop referral communication, really, in the first instance.
I think where it might fit is in the very first one, which was, I think, line two of the spreadsheet. At the very last part in column B, it says, FHIR supports provider directories, clinical workflow messaging, and could potentially provide an alternate transport mechanism. You know, maybe it goes there. Something also consider actual referral management apps that are embedded in the workflow as smart apps.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Go ahead and just Say that again. How would you like to phrase that? And I'll see if we can get that in there.
David, just to be clear, I don't think you're talking about a sort of third-party referral management app, or are you talking about something like the questionnaire approach that we've settled on where you send the information, but there may be some additional detailed information that you want to capture and send back?
I'm talking about the former, a third-party referral management.
Bespoke end-to-end referral management app.
Yeah, which has the flexibility to use FHIR to reach into the record to get the data that it needs without bothering the clinician, but the ability to interact, update, provide a glimpse back into the history of the conversation and so forth. It would be a network-based approach. Obviously the referral would have to be, referral management services would be around a network, but that network could be, as broad as the VA, if you wanted, for example, or as narrow as would be necessary. Stephen, I can send you a snippet. It doesn't look like I can edit the cell.
David, I just popped something in at the bottom of the recommendations in 3C, if we've got that displayed. If you can scroll up one level, and I might need to widen the column in order to get it to show on this screen. So let's try that.
I see it. It looks good.
Okay. Yeah, so just reading it out to folks, I said, explore the use of referral management apps, e.g. using smart technology solutions to support referral management workflows and the associated information exchange. So I think that
maybe this...
That captures that
sounds,
go ahead.
That sounds good. And just one thing to add, University of Utah did actually work on ONC-funded, I think it was a high-impact pilot, to develop a smart app, Smart on FHIR app for, helping with the referral process. I think along the lines of what you're saying, where, we can pull data from the record using FHIR to facilitate gathering and communicating the information without providers having to, type it in or whatnot. There has been some work on it. Probably the biggest issue we found was that a lot of the data points we needed just weren't available in the US Core FHIR profiles. But we've tried it. I think it makes sense too.
Yeah, and Ken, that's great to hear. And I think the advantage of the smart approach is that if you can't find the data with a query into the database, you can just ask the clinician on the screen.
Absolutely.
And that gives you kind of a flexible fallback. Don't bother the doc if you found what you need, but if you didn't, you can ask a question.
Yeah, you can even just show the recent relevant data, like the imaging, and just ask the user, do you want to just click on the ones that you think are most relevant for the person being referred to, things like that, rather than, you figure out what they are and copy and paste it into your referral, that kind of thing.
Right. And then I think, I don't know if some of you saw the paper from Vanderbilt about Wikifying clinical documentation, which is something I've proposed years ago. But you could imagine these apps actually manage a focused conversation about the referral in a flexible back and forth way that doesn't require, the complexity of trying to embed specific things in direct messages. Mm-hmm. Anyway, thanks for capturing that.
Great.
I will rest my case, unraise my hand.
Excellent. Thank you. Any other comments before we move on? I don't see any hands. And I apologize, since I'm popping back and forth between applications, I'm a little behind. So thanks, Ken, for calling that out. So we are on row 5, where we were discussing provider directories and the recommendation changes that we made that are still here in red. That are, again, trying to flesh this out, support the development and advancement of a nationwide standard for provider directories and their management to support referrals and care coordination, including cross-organizational clinical messaging. This should include information regarding, and then we list some key data fields that were identified as being needed. Any thoughts about those additions there? Great. We then go on. Our last top priority recommendation has to do with the governance for information sharing, which should enable referral scheduling, among other things, that this is a current barrier. We observed that, that Direct Trust and TEFCA and other governance frameworks exist, and we wanted to recommend that access to and governance of push messaging and the associated technical and workflow requirements be included in the scope of the final TEFCA. So, and again, the only change there was simply adding a little header text. Moving on to the priority two recommendations, again, on row eight, simply added a header there, so no substantive change to the text. In row nine, we have the recommendation about patient to clinician messaging, which today is primarily supported inside of portals, but there are certainly other opportunities to look at that. We made recommendations to support pilots of patient-to-provider messaging using multiple available technology solutions, e.g. Direct Fire, provide flexibility to individuals, patients, to select the messaging tools of their choice and to manage messaging with care team members utilizing disparate HIT solutions, and to call out the importance of having messaging solutions integrate with established clinician workflows. So I think this is all pretty straightforward, but these were additions that were made since the last time we reviewed these. So any questions or thoughts on these? You know, Ricky, I know you're on the phone, and you and I have had the chance to discuss patient-clinician messaging, you know, from the perspective of, you know, your employer, which certainly supports a lot of messaging between individuals. Just curious how this recommendation kind of jives with your view of the world.
I mean, obviously, this is a really hard problem and very workflow dependent. So I think this recommendation is fine for now. It's going to take a pretty concerted effort with relevant stakeholders to come up with something that's universally useful.
Great, thanks. On row 10, we have an observation regarding. Cynthia?
Oh, sorry. This is Sasha, actually. On row 9,
great.
Are there policy questions open about messaging and its role, for example, in the legal medical record that would also need to be considered?
It's an interesting question. I mean, do you feel that we have challenges there? I know that you know, I use your vendor's product, and patient provider messaging is considered a part of the legal medical record. I know that there is some confusion out there about people who use email. I don't know how other vendors address that. Do you feel that there's a need for us to make a recommendation in that regard?
Well, it was something where I was under the impression that there was not consistency in how folks approach that today. And so I was wondering, as we were investigating larger pilots, if it's not just a different technology question, but if there's also a sort of policy question of implementation, perhaps not, maybe that could be solved as part of a pilot of technology as well.
Any other thoughts on that?
I just think the at this point the notion should be that the result of patient physician secure messaging should be charted, or should become part of the clinical record. In some ways, this feels a little bit like a blast from the past because I had my company 17 years ago. Had pluggable patient messaging that plugged into, among others, Epic at UC Davis. So it's not clear that the issues here are primarily technology so much as they're the integrated workflow needs that have been solved through more proprietary approaches to secure messaging. I'm not sure where that comment goes, but I suspect that workflow, physician workflow, and the ability to plug in third-party applications into that workflow will be the major enabler or impediment to successive separable patient-physician messaging.
Sasha and others, what do you think of the line of text they added there at the end? Encourage consistency of policy solutions regarding the inclusion of patient clinician messaging as a part of the legal medical record.
That's fine with me, I guess, with the one caveat that I know if we're really talking about messages like things the patient wrote, more like an email, I think people have different policy feelings about automated messages. Like if you would consider, for example, connecting a device that messages the EHR with maybe large volumes of some sort of step counts or something, that would, I think, in many clinicians' eyes, be different. Is that fair?
It is. Would you want to include a caveat about that here?
Are we specifically thinking of more narrative messaging here and would want to say that just for clarity?
How about something like acknowledging that this may, that these policies
that
may vary?
We're maybe
a
little
granular.
Yeah, can I suggest that we're maybe out of our lane? This is a really good discussion for, I think, what's these days called patient-generated health data or device data. And there are definitely a set of issues involved in how much data should be in the chart. That is probably a task for somebody else's work group.
I think that's fair. Again, we really were specific to the messaging, so I think we can leave it here. Thank you.
Just speaking from the patient perspective, I think it's really important that at 30,000 feet, we really look toward usability and opportunity for two-way dialogue. So, you know, as we look at the world and the movement of open notes and the ability for that open interaction, I think we can look at, much like in other industries, there are secured dialogues and apps once you're in that can enable that empowerment of that voice and two-way and corrections to, I think, a two-way pipe also on usability for the patient when they need to correct some errors that might be reported about their health data.
Thanks, Cynthia. And I think that's consistent with what we have here. It's a good point. All right. Sensitive to the time, I want to get through the rest of this.
This is Jack. Can I actually make one quick point also on number 9? Is it possible to say something about making sure that different secure messaging applications have some standards so that they can talk to each other?
I think this is
good
David.
Point.
I think there's a direct analog there with the emergence of Direct, which emerged at a time when there were a number of non-connectable secure email systems beginning to penetrate into the industry, and Direct was an attempt to create a unified capability across all those systems. Ended up becoming the system itself, but I think there's a direct analog here for the secure messaging.
I think right now, even in the hospital, I've had to use multiple different secure messaging apps, and I can't even imagine what it would be like to get to the patients if it's completely different.
Yeah. On the other hand, how many airline apps do you have on your smartphone? You know, as many as airlines you fly.
I guess this is why we're
But you guys. and look up many of them. I think this needs attention. I agree.
So I just added a little text there, Jack, in response, as you can now see on the screen. Viable messaging solutions will integrate with one another as well as with established clinician workflows for portal-based messaging. Does that help?
Yeah, that looks great. Thank you.
Okay, good. All right. Moving on, minor changes on row 10. Standard patient-centric, multi-stakeholder, multi-institutional care plan is needed. So the addition of the word patient-centric. Jack, you had a comment there. I feel like this might belong in the general observation section, though this is super important. This seems to be a moonshot type thing that isn't really bounded by technical issues at the moment. I certainly appreciate that comment. We do have it as a level two priority, knowing that it is a bigger lift. So I'm not sure. Were you uncomfortable with it where it is here?
No, I just think a lot of the other priorities seem to be very specific. This just seems to be more general. So it just strikes me as very different in detail and sort of feasibility.
Okay. Well, unless you specifically object, I think we'll leave it here and leave it as a priority too. In the recommendation, again, just a minor textual change, ensure that patient, caregiver, and family goals and wishes are incorporated into the care plan. Again, a minor change there. Yes.
It's David. I would register the same general observation with respect to interactive care plans as with respect to referral management, that in the long run, we will probably need an app-based approach. The notion that you could exchange static documents to capture the fluidity of an evolving care plan strikes me as profoundly impractical, or let's put it this way, practical but useless. Because things will change out from under you so quickly. So I would make a similar observation that I think this, in the long run, we should explore app-based approaches for managing care plans.
All right. I've captured that, David. Thank you so much. Okay. And on row 11, we refer to real-time text messaging. Here again, a whole body of work. Which, as Jack, you pointed out in your comment, is fragmented across different services. So I think we made that point both with regard to patient-provider messaging and real-time text messaging, regardless of those who are involved. So thank you for that. And our recommendation here, again, we just added a single word to try to clarify that a little bit more. So I really appreciated how carefully folks read these and provided edits. After our recommendations, we had some general observations, which really, again, just where we added unification along with harmonization in response to Clem's response. So those were added on rows 13 and 14 without any other substantive changes having been recommended. On row 15, I know I'm speeding up a bit here. Again, we had just some minor editorial changes in the recommendation to the ONC. Not a substantive change, so just calling those out. And then a bit more changes in the final observation on row 16 that... We added this ONC policy lever suggesting convening practicing physicians, HL7, Direct Trust, Argonaut, EHR vendors, and other relevant stakeholders to identify specific use cases that would warrant a standards evolution path to allow applicable functionalities currently available in Direct to potentially also function in FHIR, develop certification criteria and associated CMS programmatic changes to allow a flexible transition to the appropriate use of the FHIR standard where this technology is deemed superior for a given clinical use case. So again, this is really trying to spell out the appropriate path for bringing fire into this use case and assuring that that's done in a way that is thoughtful and appropriate. But I think we've all acknowledged how beneficial it would be to move some of this from or have at least the option of using fire in addition to using direct, as we've seen for some of these workflows. Any comments about any of that? Great.
Stephen, this is Terry. A really general comment. It's sort of, where does ISPTF go from here? And sort of, how does it get institutionalized in the process? Meaning, you know, shouldn't there always be a sort of an ISP function somewhere that's saying, here are some upcoming issues that we see in the future. Here's how we prioritize them. Here's the approach. So I'm just wondering about sort of institutionalizing this approach.
You know, I think that's a great comment, Terry, and I'll make one response, which is that I think it provides almost a perfect segue to Carmen from the ONC, who's going to be talking to us about the ISA and how it is evolving and how it has evolved in its most recent annual iteration. You know, Steve Posnack made a comment at HIMSS in one of the early sessions where he referred to a standing committee or task force focusing on identifying priority uses and use cases. And I actually had a little dialogue with him and Elise subsequently saying, you know, did you mean to say that the ISP task force was going to be a permanent task force? And he said, oh, no, you guys have a timeline, you know, you've got a certain set of deliverables that were specified by 21st Century Cures. But I think your point is well taken that reviewing and gaining this kind of stakeholder input into priorities is a critical function. And as we've said from the beginning, it should occur in coordination with the evolution of USCDI. So I think that it's a really good point, and we should come back to that with ONC leadership as we gear up the next round of USCDI work. All right. Having said that, the next on our agenda is Carmen, who we've asked to do two things for us today. One is just to give us a brief update of the changes that have been made to the ISA in its annual iteration to the 2019 reference edition, and then to begin us on the path of our discussion of medication and pharmacy data and the standards that exist to support its exchange, to then lead us into a consideration of that topic area.
Thank you so much. This is Carmen. I'm an IT specialist in the Office of Technology at ONC. Next slide, please. Thank you. All right, so updates to the ISA are inspired by primarily public comment. Sometimes it's inspired by rulemaking, including ruling that affects the ONC Health IT certification program, and other factors such as stakeholder interoperability needs and HHS and ONC mission support. I've highlighted just a few, but not all of the updates that we've made to the e-prescribing ISA over the last year, and those were included in the reference edition ISA for 2019. I'm including the link to the ISA in the chat if anybody would like to go there to dig around and explore the section as I'm going through it, as I'm unable to provide a live demo. So some of the new pages in the ISA that are included in the reference edition include weight-based dosing, especially for pediatric patients, and the prescriber request to a PDMP, to a state PDMP, was built out quite a bit, including some emerging standards. And although the reference edition was published in January of 2019, there have also been some additional updates since then that will be included in the 2020 edition reference ISA. But this is, as you know, this is a continuously evolving site, and we rely a great deal on public comment and input from each of you on the call and all of our stakeholders. And as next slide, please. One of the new functionalities that were added more recently was actually a specialty care and settings functionality that highlights opioids and pediatric pages that are relevant to those specific use cases. And the top highlight is actually where you can download the reference edition. And a few other new interoperability needs pages were also added, including ones that support EPCS, the ability for a prescriber to communicate drug administration events, and ability of a prescriber to communicate with a REMS administrator, and also for the exchange of PDMP data across the PDMP ecosystem. So as you click on, thank you. If you click on the specialty care and settings button for the opioids, just click on the opioids button. It'll highlight a number of interoperability needs pages that are specific to that and or that supports opioids efforts, including a number of e-prescribing pages. Next slide, please. Thank you. And as was mentioned earlier, the 21st Century Cures MPRM was released, and it inspired additional changes to the e-prescribing pages. And one of the prime changes in the MPRM is the update of the script, the NCPDP script standard from version 10.6 to 2017.071. And as I'm sure you're aware, CMS finalized their adoption of 2017.071 for ERX and medical history to be effective January 1st, 2020. Historically, ONC and CMS has harmonized our policies and aligned standards to ensure that the current standard for certification at ONC also permits the use of Part D standards. So if the new standard will be adopted in our final rule, it'll eventually become the new baseline for health IT certification. So our approach is actually, next slide, please, to create a new criterion for e-prescribing called B11. And B11 includes all of the transactions that were in B3. Some of them will be built out to accommodate the new standard, and those are highlighted in green. Next slide, please. And as you can see, lots of additional transactions will be included in the criteria or are proposed to be included in the criteria. And I'd like to just highlight that this includes REMS transactions. And many of you may be aware of REMS transactions coming from the FDA, which is the Risk Evaluation and Mitigation Strategies. And the REMS transaction page or the interoperability need page is also tagged for opioids as the FDA recently updated their opioid analgesic REMS in September 2018. Next slide, please. I apologize if this screenshot is so small. I did just want to highlight that on many of the pages on the ISA, you'll see on the bottom of some of the standards tables, some of the new emerging standards. And even for new prescription, which has been included in the e-prescribing certification criteria since the 2014 edition, we're now adding more emerging standards that are addressing this specific need. And in the limitations, dependencies, and preconditions, you'll see the differences where there are differences between script 10.6 and script 2017.071. I encourage you to dig around the electronic prescribing ISA as well as the ISA overall. We do continue to accept public comments throughout the year and work very hard to incorporate those comments. Sometimes we might have to reach out. Thank you. There's my contact information in case anybody has questions or have any suggestions for any of the ISA pages. You can also go to the comment section at the bottom of any page to follow that formal process for providing comments. Are there any questions that are specific to ERX?
Well, I really thank you for that, Carmen. That was a fast and remarkably detailed discussion, which was very helpful. and I think does set us up for our discussion. You know, I don't think, has Clem joined us? Don't think that he has. So Clem shared a comment, at least with me, I'm not sure, I don't recall who else was included, that he was really questioning our decision to do a focused cycle on medication and pharmacy data because he felt that so much progress was being made. I think he's shared with us as a group before that he thinks e-prescribing, EPCS, a lot of these things are going well, that they're more standardized than many other areas in our industry, and that when you look at the proposed rules and really the harmonization that is going forward, that you know, his take was that things were moving along well. So he's not here to represent it, but I think that in some sense he did challenge us to say, you know, were we right? Were we on target when we identified the meds and pharmacy data area as the one in greatest need of further evaluation by this task force? So I'll just sort of put that on the table. We did receive from all of you a substantial amount of input into the Google Doc that was posted, and perhaps we can bring that up to stimulate our discussion of this area. I still don't have editing capabilities for that document. I can't even change the width of columns to make it fit better on the screen. So the folks from Excel, can you bring this one up? I can send you, if you don't have it, the link that I have. I'm not going to bother sharing my screen because...
Do you want me to share it?
Can you get into it, Ken, and maybe you'll have the editing capabilities that I don't yet have.
It looks like someone is sharing now. Is that the Excel team sharing?
Is it? Okay.
No.
That works too?
Yes, that's us.
Okay,
please go ahead and share that then.
Maybe it's just taking a second to load. Are you guys still seeing just where it says share my screen?
Yes, I am.
Yes, give us one moment. Sorry about that.
Yeah, this is Cynthia. I'm having trouble getting in it as well.
Here we go.
It's starting. I see it.
Ah, good. That's the one.
Maybe we can zoom it in a little bit.
Ken, do you want to guide us through this this segment?
Yeah.
Walk through some of the...
That sounds good. I'm going to just on my end zoom it a little bit. Change view. Okay. So, let me see. I'm going to maximize on my screen. Let me know if that causes problems for anyone else. Okay. Hopefully that didn't. Okay. So, the first comment was from Clem, and it's basically exactly what Stephen just discussed, but let's just say it in his own words. So we had asked folks to identify issues in this area that they see as challenges and what needs to be done. He said, I think this category has the very least needs and should not have been on the list. The current NPRM includes at least 10 new NCPDP functions that cover almost everything anyone would want. The one new function mentioned by the committee was structured SIGs, and that is a bad idea. For declining doses and other complicated SIGs, better to allow systems to send prepackaged text and or for physicians type it in structured. SIGs will be a big burden on providers, take more time, and better for the pharmacy to read the text and do that complicated structuring. Part of our mission has been to reduce prior burden, not to increase it. Challenge, pharmacy has had the most complete attention. and then he said no gaps, and PRM already handles it. So that's Clem's comments. I don't think there's really anything more to discuss other than he thinks it's well handled, and he's asking people to please not require physicians to do more structured SIGs. Let's move on to the next ones, and then maybe the I had some too, but maybe the folks who commented can comment on their own. Terry, can you comment on yours?
Yeah, just I guess this is all use case based. Structured SIGs is sort of a use case beyond what long-term post-acute care and home and community-based services probably need at this point. So I'm just thinking that more simple, basic use cases, if they're well established, might be the baseline where we want to achieve rather than, excellence to the 99th percent. It's really a question of at what level of adequacy are we going to call, or are we going to declare victory and move on? So I think it's a pretty low bar for post-acute care, and perhaps not as high a bar as was established, as Clem alludes to.
You know, it's interesting, Terry, because you call out in your comment dose, frequency, time of last administration, kind of the preparation instructions, and to me that's structured SIG. Right, that a structured SIG is what allows a computer to actually know how much of what medication the patient is getting at what time, so that things like full reconciliation can be performed. My comment, which I shared last time, when Clem raised this verbally. Is that, I'm still a big believer in structured SIGs. I still think that it allows, it would allow systems to provide more detailed decision support and alerting that could improve patient safety, that it could substantially improve the efficiency of the refill process. And it's interesting because he calls out issues of ramping doses and changing doses over time. And again, at least the EHR vendor that I use now supports all of those in a structured format in a way that allows providers to specify their preferences for, their commonly used SIGs, et cetera. My counter to Clem's and perhaps even your comment is that I think there is still opportunities here to support these very workflows if we chose to go there.
And sorry, apologies, because I didn't do my homework, but in many cases, the med histories that we're getting back are coming from PBMs, which come off of adjudicated claims data and don't include any SIG information at all, where such information is available from pharmacies. So I do think even in the area of med history from pharmacy and PBMs for med reconciliation, there are gaps in use of even existing data fields and standards relative to SIG information, structured or unstructured.
And this is David. I would add the other distinction that's worth maybe thinking about is the distinction between templated SIGs and truly structured SIGs. I know a lot of vendors have the ability to create a template. A physician can basically say, this is the text I want to paste in to describe the tapering dose or whatever. That's not a structured SIG. Structured SIG is considerably more complicated.
Yeah, and structured, maybe the better word is computable, right?
Well, I think it is structured in the sense that the NCPDP message has structured fields that the information has to go into. I think computable is yet another variation. We, for example, and I'm sure of many others, have written parsers that can read free text SIGs and tease them apart into structured components. So it's computable in the sense that we can actually write a parser for it, but it's not structured in the sense that it fits into slots and a message defined by NCPDP.
Yeah, and again, this is you know, healthcare is always a power law field. My point being that right now, I don't believe that physicians are routinely getting textual unstructured SIGs where such exist, because they're getting them from the PBM side and not from the pharmacy side. Even when you get into structured SIGs, there's a tremendous amount of utility for structured SIGs that allow you to compute the total dosing in relatively simple cases. And then very clearly, there are cases of titrating doses of IV drugs, et cetera, that are really complicated, and they get fractally more complicated the farther on you go. And you know, the point being, there's utility to capture marching up the stack at each level, even if there's some areas that are just too hard that you punt.
Are you arguing for or against structured SIG, Arian?
I'm arguing number one for, let's make sure that the unstructured SIG that exists in pharmacies gets to physicians, number one. Number two, I'm arguing that as we take on, or if we take on structured SIG, that there's a natural marching order by which there's utility that we can capture taking on structured SIG that are relatively less complicated cases, and we don't have to jump to titrations or tapers or IV drugs or some of the other corner cases that are incredibly complicated. We can capture some value and utility in some of the easier cases up front as we march down towards some of the fractally more complicated cases.
So you're arguing for...
I think that's a really good point.
...structure SIG.
Yep.
And you know, it may well be that structured SIG is really the next frontier. You know, it may be, as Clem says, that so much of this is being taken care of, that the new proposed rule really covers a lot of what people have been wanting, and that laying out briefly a path forward to as you said, Arian, bring back the data that does exist, in whatever form it is, so that providers can see that. I think your point about the history data from PBMs and pharmacies is key, and then structuring what can be structured readily and then moving along that path. Because I think it doesn't sound like there's any disagreement about the potential value for being able to calculate total daily doses and being able to provide some decision support around SIGs.
And I think we have like a dozen of these. Maybe we can do at least a quick pass through all of them, and then I'll come back because we'll be departing from this topic for a while. Can we move on to the next one? And Victor, I know you may be muted. Please speak up if you want to comment on yours. Otherwise, we can read it for you.
Yeah, hi, just a quick comment. I think Arian said it best. Just in my experience, that, you know, especially working on opioids, it's very difficult to do certain calculations. But again, I think to the extent that it makes sense to either define standards or help people understand where there are standards that are not being used, I think it might be multifactorial. But I think I'll leave it at that. Thank you.
Thanks, Victor. Okay, and I can't see the hands raised, so if anybody has hands up or whatnot, please just raise your voice. Maybe the
I'll
next
watch,
one.
I'll watch for the
go ahead.
Hand.
Okay, thank you.
I'll watch for the hands, but you can go ahead.
Awesome. Thank you. The next few are from me, if you can go down rather than up. Let's see, I think we're in row 4. Okay. I think we skipped a few. I think row 4 was my next one. Let's see if we can make that or 5, maybe. Okay.
Five.
Okay. Perfect. So I'll just quickly go through these. So my first comment was on exchange of prescription medication order data. So the challenge, again, more information on the medication identity may be needed, such as dose, quantity, frequency, et cetera. And one issue we found was current U.S. core fire profiles don't require the transmittal of even free text SIGs, and many meds are prescribed as free text SIG only. Clear requirement, I think, is require U.S. core fire profiles to transmit free text SIGs. I put this in the last cycle of ballot comments, but it seems if you have a SIG, you should send it. And it's inadequate for the standard to say, you know, even if you have it, you don't actually have to send even the free text SIG. We do run into this, for example, in some of our point of care opioid use cases where we could parse the free text SIGs, but it's just not sent, so we just can't provide guidance. So that's, I think, pretty straightforward. If somebody bothered to write a free text SIG or there is a SIG, just required to be sent as part of the transmission. Row six, med dispense data, and I see there's amendment from David, including outpatient mail order pharmacies. Med dispense data is not universally available and currently not available via FHIR. So, for example, FHIR has this notion of what has been ordered, what has been patient reported, but in the U.S. core FHIR profiles, there is no how do you describe dispense data such as PDMP data for opioids. So I think the need here is for U.S. core FHIR profile for medication dispense. And there is a U.S. Implementation guide for medication dispense that I think was meant to transition to this U.S. core. And probably the biggest thing looking at that is whether to use NDC and or RX norm codes. Because a lot of dispense data is in terms of NDCs, but a lot of U.S. core requires RX norms, so that needs to be reconciled. Otherwise, every single potential user would need to do those mappings. And this would include PDMP data and could leverage existing ONC efforts in this area. And then, of course, ShareScripts could be a good source, but could miss data not in its network. Talking to folks in different health systems, I think the coverage can range anywhere from like 60 to 95% in their local area. For us, it's closer to 60 to 70%, which is great, but you know, you're still missing a bunch if you're relying just on that network. So solutions could involve defining the U.S. core FHIR profile for medication dispense, and then the state PDMP should use that for PDMP data, and RX dispensing sources should support the profile as well, and EHR should support their use. I comment on people's spelling, but apparently I can't spell either. maybe this could be an area of discussion. And I know Ricky, for example, previously had discussed the need for the dispensing sources to provide this data as well. So I'll pause there and see if anybody has comments on this.
And this is Ricky. I just have one comment related to the use of NDC versus RX norm. I don't know that there needs to be a reconciliation there. We could simply ask that they send both and have them do the work on their end. I know in general for Argonaut, we've required one main coding system, but this may be a case where having both, if available, would be much more useful.
This is Arian. I'd say that having RX norm in all cases would be much more useful than having NDC in all cases. NDC really is, in many ways, a legacy standard. It's a packaging unit standard that's really intended for tracking of manufacturer packaging units, and not really well intended for the use case of, for example, med reconciliation. I'd also point out that, again, this issue of medication dispense data is an interesting one because in many cases, the med history that people get through some of the prescribing networks is PBM data, which is really claims data and is only contains the data that's available in order to justify the claim, which doesn't include, in many cases, the SIG. The pharmacies have access to the actual fill and dispense data. And we should also note, in many cases, there's a fairly complex workflow pharmacy side where it's important to understand whether the medication's been ordered. In many cases, the medication's ordered and claimed before the patient picks it up. So it's really useful to know what the patient actually came in and picked up, which may or may not map to what comes off of a PBM file. So, and particularly as the CURES defines provider in a very broad way and requires information exchange, access, and use from a broad range of providers, including pharmacies, this area of pharmacy fill data and dispense data, and you know, is a really ripe area for improving patterns of access and to full medication history in ways that are really useful for coordination of care.
This is David. I would second that. I think this is the biggest area where we need a systematic approach as opposed to these kind of piecemeal crib together approaches that we have to live with today. We also have warring standards that would need to be resolved. You know, the pharmacy side typically uses NCPDP and some even older arcane standards, and we're talking about FHIR here, which is not in use between pharmacies and PBMs. So this is an area, I think, where there's a lot of patient safety, patient adherence, all sorts of opportunities for improving. And it's not a standards problem. There's plenty of standards. It's a system problem.
Okay. Maybe if I can, I'll move on to the next one. Just go down to 7. So the need here is to identify whether patients were on a particular drug in the past. The challenge here is one of the core resources available for this is the National Library of Medicine's RxNav and related tools. The issue here is that they don't return Rx norm codes for discontinued drugs. So after about a year after a drug goes off market, it's no longer retrievable. So for example, this is fine if you say, hey, has the patient been on this drug over the past year? But if you want to say like, hey, has the patient ever received, say, chemotherapeutic drugs or, you know, other medications and it's now off market, you could have issues where you erroneously think the patient hasn't been on it. It's just a known issue. So the gap to fill is to support pulling of archived Rx norm codes in the National Library of Medicine RxNav APIs, and NLM is aware, so I think this is just a matter of resourcing. So the solution here would be to fund the NLM to get this work completed. I'm not sure how many folks realize using this resource that this is a hole. I ran into it when we were doing opioid-related work and realized opioids that existed in the National Library of Medicine, like, you know, 6 months ago, no longer were present in our data set, and that I didn't expect that. So it seems like something that could be easily solved if it could be resourced. row 8 is medication reconciliation. We've touched on this. But the challenge is similar medication data entered by different sources are difficult to reconcile. This is obviously a big deal, right? So now that we have a lot of data connectivity coming in, it's true also for things like problems, but now clinicians are being asked to do enormous amounts of reconciliation, and like it's just daunting when you look at it, the amount of time and effort required to look at slightly different or free texted or whatnot. And I think this is a clear part in terms of clinician burden too. Like, how can we make this experience more efficient? Because it is pretty painful. So, for example, what's a gap is effective approaches to knowledge-driven medication reconciliation, and for that reconciliation effort to persist through systems. So there's going to be quite a bit of, say, human effort going into reconciling. There needs to be ways to make sure that the effort that was spent isn't lost the next time. The potential solutions would be fund deeper analyses and potentially reference solution development for MedRec, so it's not overly burdensome to providers. I mean, this could be a product differentiator for folks, but maybe as a baseline, you know, there could be some public good kind of things that could be created here that could be built upon from, but it does seem like a major pain point. Let me just quickly go through others unless and someone has a comment. Go ahead.
It's David. On the last, your last point there about med reconciliation being a hard problem, you're not really identifying a standards gap here. It's really more that you would just say fund more research into how to automate it.
Well, I don't know, because, for example, the gap could be that people don't use structured SIGs, right? so that it's harder to say these two are the same things. I assume standards will have some aspect in this. For example, if you want to transmit and keep the results of reconciliations, right? Like, if you see like three different drugs from three different sources, and somebody actually went through and said, you know, this is actually the same as these two, I think that the only place where that's kept potentially is in that system. There's no way for that knowledge to reach, I think, currently, the other two healthcare systems that a physician at, you know, health system A concluded that this med is reconciled with these two other meds.
This reminds me of an area of my deep, deep past, but that's exactly right. The assertion that this, that X is a reconciled med list is very different from the assertion that Y is a list of meds. And in many cases, in the standards, I don't know where we are right now with fire, but in many cases, the standards aren't capable of distinguishing between those two assertions. The second issue is that many standards don't carry persistent identifiers, which makes re-reconciliation in the case of updates very difficult or needlessly difficult, because you aren't able to say, okay, I saw that thing already, I already reconciled that thing, I don't need to go through the duplicative work. So I think both of those are really, really useful observations for automating some med reconciliation work.
I agree, particularly the provenance point that Arian made there a second ago. I think that's maybe worth calling out because it would help with reconciliation. But you know, the reason this is a hard problem is we're trying to solve. It is analogous to, instead of having a bank account to track how much money you have, you just keep a running tab with all of the vendors that you deal with, and you hope that you can somehow reconcile all those transactions into a consistent number. The only approach that will really solve this is to give charge of the current medication profile of a patient to a controlled source, a PCP or whatever, and have transactions flow through that source. But that's not going to happen.
Well, that's the point, though, is that even in cases where somebody, for example, for discharge meds or admit meds, where somebody actually has taken the work to reconcile the med list, there's no way of making that assertion. Or distinguishing that assertion from, you know, this is a list of random meds.
Right, and then if anybody else who wants to prescribe for that patient has no way to connect to that data because they don't know it exists. There's no, they're not aware that someone did a reconciliation 2 days ago. How would they know?
Exactly. So maybe we should help them know.
This is Terry. I'm wondering if. It's likely that there will be a central source of truth for medication. I mean, obviously, the pharmacies are pushing hard to become that, and they're probably better positioned than the PCP to do so. But under the assumption that some central source of truth will emerge, sort of what are the standards that we'd need to support that central source, whatever it is?
Well, yep. I think it's mostly system gaps. You'd have to rewire everybody's system to talk to whoever that authority was. The standards probably are pretty good.
The standards are not pretty good because they don't establish, as we noted, provenance, and they don't establish the status of reconciliation.
But if I have to update our central authority every time a prescription is written, you could solve that problem trivially. It's the connection to that system, matching the patient, understanding you have the authority to do it, all those system issues.
Yeah, and again, all I'm asking for is a much simpler level of that, which is that if the discharge meds from a hospital have already been reconciled and a poor attending has gone through the laborious task of assembling that reconciled list and it gets sent down to the PCP, at least annotate that laborious clinical task has been taken and the attending has asserted that this is, in fact, the discharge list.
Okay. Let's keep going. Could you move to row 9, please? I think we just have a few more just want to cover before we go. So row 9, I think, was next. Okay, so row 9, so here's, we've also touched on this, interpretation calculations using MedSig components. So the challenge here is a lot of SIGs are in free text. So my comment here is Clem notes, I don't think the solution is to ban free text SIGs. That just doesn't seem like our role, probably. Maybe professional studies could come up with some recommendations, but that would be a big deal. So EHR systems can provide mechanisms to facilitate this, but that is probably a vendor-dependent issue, not really appropriate for government or standards regs, like making it easy to write structured tapering scripts. That's, for example, something that's become recently easy to do in our vendor system. So perhaps what could be done here is to develop public good resources for converting free text SIGs into structured SIGs. So I actually worked on this last Christmas. This was like my personal project. When I was working on a CDC-ONC project on opioids and guidance there. So the issue there was for our health system in about a one-year period, about 15% of our opioids were free texted. About 10,000 unique SIGs was what I found. And I looked for, hey, somebody must have run into this. I'm sure there are ones, but I couldn't find really any that were free or open source and, you know, and usable. So I did create one, able to capture about 80% by volume of these and convert them with confidence into structure. So we use this for morphine milligram equivalents that we're using in production right now. And that was government built. It's already open source. You know, I don't know if there's others like that, but so one solution here would be to fund public good free text SIG to structured SIG converters. And an alternative or addition would be to define functional requirements for, you know, how this kind of, you know, what the interface for that kind of part would be, like inputs, outputs, metadata generation, and then let the market compete, maybe in addition or alternate. But I was kind of surprised that, given how obvious this need is, that there was nothing really available in the public domain to use for this. I'll just move on to other ones. Yeah, go ahead. There was a comment? Okay, I'll go into row 10, PDMP use. So the challenge is access and cost. Row 10. Yeah, so issues, PDMP access is regulated in a patchwork of state regulations, such as some states not allowing PDMP data to be incorporated into the EHR for distance support. And PDMP access, particularly for downloading data into the EHR, can be cost prohibitive from a health system perspective. So some solutions potentially could include streamlining regs across states or PDMP for PDMPs, such as federal regulation or perhaps model state regulation, and providing fire-based access to PDMP data at low cost directly through state PDMPs. And there is actually an ONC project and pilot on this currently, so I think that sounds really promising, but it seems like this is something that could have a real impact in things like addressing the opioid epidemic. I think if we go to the next one, I think that's David, I think, maybe?
Cynthia Fisher is the next one on the
Cynthia.
Yes, hi. We just did a little bit of changes here, some real time. So, you know, the point that we bring up is really about patients and physicians needing to know the real price of their prescriptive care. So that that is inclusive of their net negotiated price, so that you would see the employer plan coverage as well as their deductible or their share of plan and their out-of-pocket as well. And a lot of this has come from cases where patients, for instance, I can give an example of the metformin new combination drug, that if you take the patients were actually getting, let me just look this up quickly, metformin and glyburide, typically under $15 a month. And the new combo drug came out with a name brand that was, until after the fact, many patients were discovering it was costing them the price out of pocket to them was $500 a month and became unaffordable. So, you know, patients oftentimes embarrassingly either don't comply or adherence to their drugs, or
you know, and then it might take them months to be able to go back to see their doctor to change the prescriptive care back to an older combination. So bringing that as just one example of many, you know, as we look forward to transparency being part of the equation and the decision-making as what is realistic based upon a patient's plan as well as their financial circumstances, you know, I think it behooves us to take a forward position to enable, you know, readily available visibility into these prices at point of care so that it can be decided in combination with the clinician choice and patient choices of care. And finally, you know, to have it be open so that as we look to the marketplace, you know, as we have a competitive marketplace and so many other fronts, that we can look at cost-effective pharmaceutical management downstream. And we can set that.
This is Clem. So NCPDP has been actively working on a thing to transmit back by insurance plan the various cost differentials. But I don't know exactly where it stands, but you keep an eye on it. The second thing, this combination thing has been discouraged, at least in my medical school days, for a long time. But it's ridiculous that you put two drugs together and it explodes the cost. So I fully agree with your sentiments.
Not a standard.
Thank you, Clem. Thank you, Clem. And I think we behoove it to allow this pipe or pathway for what will make for competitive forces in the marketplace and greatly improve the quality of patient care in a timely way at the appropriate time. So I thank you all to just consider that.
So this is David. There are
Yeah, we're going to need to go to public comments for a couple of minutes, and then we can come back and pick up right there, David.
Sure.
Okay. See that.
Thanks, Stephen. So if we could just get the phone number up, great. Thank you. And operator, can you please open the line for public comments?
Certainly. If you'd like to make a public comment, please press *1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the question queue, and you may press *2 if you'd like to remove your comment from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys. Again, it is *1 to make a public comment at this time.
Thank you. And I just want to confirm, Clem, I heard you jumped on the call. I know Jack and Sasha, Valerie as well. Did anyone else join since we
joined? Yeah, I just got off a plane at about 5 minutes ago, so I'm sorry.
That's okay. Do we have either Raj or Ram, Scott, or Tina on the call? Okay. Just wanted to confirm. And then, operator, do we have any comments in the queue at this time?
We have none at this time.
Okay, thanks. So I think I'm going to hand it back to David. We kind of caught you mid-thought there.
Thank you. I just wanted to point out on the actual costs front, for providers, there are a couple of commercial services that now provide that capability that a number of the vendors have embedded. I don't think they currently use standards, so that's something that could potentially change. And then on the consumer-facing side, Karin, C-A-R-I-N, the group that is pushing hard for consumer access to their health record data, has a very active project to establish appropriate standards and structures to use those services to report directly to consumers without requiring that they go through the physician. So there are two efforts underway to address these problems, is all my point.
Well, David, do you know about the NCPDP effort?
Well, I think that the NCPDP stuff would be used in the future, but it's not in the commercial products today. They're using
I'm not sure it's cooked yet, but
yeah. I it may not be. I don't know. I'm just saying that the commercial stuff is not standards based, but it works and it's got high demand from providers. They really like it.
And just for the sake of time, do you want to move on?
I just think we're at the very beginning of this, and to whatever we can do to make it open, that we we allow the pipes for the competitive forces, I think we benefit the patients and providers across the board in the consumer.
Yep, agree.
David, do you want to go through the, I think, the last 2 years? I think row 12 and 13.
Yeah, and again, this may be redundant to work that's already underway, but just to the complex process of prior authorization for higher tier drugs, restricted access drugs, is something that it creates tremendous physician burden and can be addressed and automated at least partially by appropriate standards. I believe there are good standards in design on this, but I just want to call out the functional need for prior authorization services. And then on the portable prescriptions, this is just something that come up in the past. Our pharmacy team tells me that there's work underway to address this, but the thought here is that if you have a prescription electronically sent to a particular pharmacy and for whatever reason you want to have that prescription transferred electronically to another pharmacy, that has been difficult to do, and some of the services to allow that to happen simply were not present, but I'm told those are also under development in NCPDP. So these may be both being addressed.
Well, I just want to say how much we appreciate everybody's input in the time since our last meeting and calling these things out. Clem, we were channeling you a bit at the beginning with your overarching question as to whether this area requires or would benefit from the focus of this group. I think what I've heard in these, 12 comments that we just went through is that there really is some opportunity. But a lot of great work has been done, including in the proposed rule. But I at least feel like we would be well advised to go ahead and spend some time on this when we come back together.
I'm okay with that. But the thing I wish I had a chance to weigh in on was the structured SIGs, and there's a bunch of dimensions to that may not have been.
Yeah, we talked about it in your absence.
Oh, good. Okay. But did you decide everything?
No, but we decided there was probably still some value. I just wanted to come back to the work that was done that we did on orders and results, draft recommendations. And that was where we incorporated Victor's input. I'm going to try to see. It's on row 13, actually. I'm sorry, whoever's running the slides. It's the second to last row. So I did incorporate, Victor, a number of the details that you had shared, and I promised to do that for the group before we came back. So this is there. We don't have a lot of time to dwell on it, but it basically took some of the suggestions that Victor had made and incorporated them into our recommendations. So I invite people to look at those, especially Victor, to make sure that they are providing appropriately what you had suggested. I did limit, Victor, you started getting into things like SIGs and nursing orders, which I think were somewhat different than the orders and results scope that we had been focusing on, so I dropped those out. So hopefully, no offense taken there.
So just one comment in response to David. There is in already transfer of one or more prescriptions. It's called RX transfer request, response, and confirm in the NPRM. So it's more than on the way.
Good.
All right, so we are at time. I think we have accomplished our task of finalizing our recommendations in the two domains that we've touched on, and I think setting ourselves up to dig into medication and pharmacy. I would invite task force members to continue to contribute to the Google sheet that we have, and then I think what Ken and I will try to do before we reconvene would be to sort of shorten that and compile it into the format of observation, recommendation, policy levers that we've used in the past, and we can pick up our work from that point forward.
Thank you to you both chairs. We appreciate your work.
Yep.
Thank you.
Excellent.
We'll notify you when
we'll see you all in a couple of months.
Okay, thanks, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye.